Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Panoramic Outdoors Podcast. I got Sheldon sitting across from me right now. He's looking all giddy like a little schoolgirl.
Yeah, I'm super pumped for this episode. It's going to be great. We're sitting in Neepawa at the Bay Hill Inn and Suites, and it is a hotel in Neepawa. Very clean, very new, fresh, modern. If you guys ever have a chance to come to Neepawa and you're going to stay, check this place out. They were very friendly and nice to helping us out this weekend. We're doing some work with Tourism Neepawa, some work with Josh McFadden, and getting a lot of content, a lot of video. It's been great.
How does that guy always end up tangled up in the stuff we're doing?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure he's like a panoramic wannabe.
I'm not too sure if he's following us around or we're just following him around.
Yeah, either way.
Probably just following him around.
The stuff you can learn from that guy when it comes to photography is amazing.
Yeah, he's pretty brilliant.
We're like, and then the other thing, we're driving. So we went down to this lake in Neepawa called Park Lake, and it's where a lot of the geese go during the day. And so he wanted to get some pictures, and we're walking around, blah, blah, blah. And then we jump in the pickup, and start heading out of the Park Lake area, and he just like yells at me. He's like, "Whoa, stop!" And I'm like, "What?" I'm thinking there's like a good shot or something. He's like, "Look at all those mushrooms." I'm like, "Awesome!" So he's like, "Man, those are like oyster mushrooms." And he's out in the bush, and traffic's like driving by, and he's cutting mushrooms off the trees, and everyone's just looking at us. And I'm just like, "Holy crap!"
Oh man, so I just drove out here this morning, and a couple miles out of town, there's like somebody who like cut the ditch of their yard or whatever you can say. You know, some people leave their ditch, just let it grow. But yeah, some people like to cut it with their, when they cut their grass, and like half of the ditch was just like covered in these mushrooms. And I just thought, man, I should give him Fadden a call and see if he, if I can pick these things or what. He's probably be pumped. He's probably be eating this tonight for dinner.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been a few good trips with him in and around Neepawa. We're checking out lots of stuff. Bow hunting season. Just want to touch on that quickly. What happened? Yes. What happened to you?
Man, I've had a major, I don't even know where to start. Had some issues with my bow.
Why are you crying right now?
It was devastating, man. Like, this is the first year that I had actually planned to do like a full bow season, because, I mean, for the last 10 years, essentially, I was either guiding or as up north flying for the falls.
Yeah.
So this year is like, sweet, I'm going to be home. I can go hunt like hopefully a couple times a week kind of thing. It's busy and stuff to schedule everything with school and the kids and family and stuff. And shout out to my wonderful significant other, Jody. She looks after her crazy kids and lets me go out hunting all this time. I'll use that term loosely. I'd probably still be going, but she does look after our insane children, and which I know is a big task because I do it once in a while.
Yeah. Well, the thing was too is like when you texted in that group text, and you're like, "Oh man, I just broke my bow or whatever," and I was sitting there and with my other buddy, and I was like, "Man, I feel bad for this guy. He's like, all he's been talking about all summer is like, oh yeah, I get to go out like hunting maybe a couple nights a week. I haven't been able to do this for years." And then all of a sudden, boom, your equipment fails. And
yeah. So what happened was my draw stop slipped past my string. So on these old Hoyts, the draw stop hits up against up the string to stop the cam from rotating, and it slipped past. And I didn't realize that, and I released an arrow, and the string came off of the cam as my arrow snapped, and bent my bottom cam wheel, and I took it into Heights and they couldn't locate another cam. And I tried on all like the Facebook groups and some of the forums and stuff, and nobody had one. So we relooked at the budget and I think it's mainly for mental health reasons that I'm purchasing a new bow, hopefully pretty soon here.
So when all that happened, was it catastrophic to the point where like you might have got lucky that you didn't get hurt kind of idea?
You know what? It was crazy because like I shot an arrow and I was taking another target, and I thought, man, I'm just thinking about all those people who have shot a bow and had like an arrow fail and they get this arrow through the arm.
Right.
And so my very next shot, I have this failure and I have no idea what happened. All I hear is this massive, like, sounds like exactly what you would think. It's not a quiet release at all.
Right.
And I feel something hit my arm. I hear pieces of the arrow kind of hitting the ground. And my instant thought was, I have an arrow sticking through my arm right now.
Sticking through your neck.
Yeah. And I looked down and thankfully just the string slapped my wrist and it kind of took a bit of skin off. But got away pretty lucky with that one.
That's crazy, man.
What about you? What's happening?
I same old song and dance. I'm hard into archery season right now. I didn't say hard on for archery, but basically same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah. Sitting a lot in the stands. Been seeing some great deer. Just kind of waiting for them to change a little bit. I have this feeling that in the next couple days and maybe a week, when the leaves start changing, their patterns are going to change a little bit more.
Velvet's coming off right now.
Yeah, and I've been noticing where I'm hunting is a lot of the deer are moving very late and at nighttime. So my morning hunts are great, but my night hunts are far and few between.
Interesting.
So yeah, like this area. So
yeah.
But then you have to factor in my other career that I have of working day to day. I don't get out in the mornings that much. So hopefully I'm kind of looking forward to maybe this little bit of a change where the deer might start coming out a little bit earlier in the night for legal time, I guess. But other than that, yeah, archery season and trying to get a moose hunt figured out, which has been harder than I thought this year, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah. I know Tristan and I went out for birds the other day.
How did that go?
With our buddy Tyler. It went good. It was slower than usual. We went to one of our normal hot spots that was not so hot.
Yeah.
With the dry summer and stuff, there's been and it was a big south wind too, so.
I was going to ask.
Marsh was kind of dry.
In Manitoba, it's been super dry in a lot of the areas, so like, is it hard access now?
It's tougher to get back into the spots that we wanted to get to. We couldn't actually get back to where we wanted to, and there was... I mean, I don't know if it was just to do with the winds or the day or whatever, but we just didn't notice as many birds flying.
Yeah. Do you think there's as many birds around as previous years? Maybe this dry weather has maybe pushed them farther to certain different areas? Maybe?
Yeah. You know what? We really didn't see the numbers that we normally do in that particular marsh that we were in. So, that could very well be it. The birds could be somewhere else.
Yeah, I've noticed like around this area, Nipaw, they're just starting to flock up a little bit better. Usually by this time you have good groups of birds you can go and hunt in the fields, right? Yeah. Agriculture land. And it seems to be a little bit less numbers around, but maybe I'm wrong, but this is kind of what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
I was up working up by Russell, and there's lots of birds up there. I couldn't believe it. I didn't know there was that many birds in that area. But yeah, like every second or third field there'd be 400 or 500 to 1,000 canopies in them. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. Crazy.
Yeah, that's where was I going with that? I had something interesting to say, but I forgot it. On that hunt we still ended up taking home 14 birds, which isn't terrible at all.
Did you guys try hanging them?
No, we did not hang those ones. No, we didn't really have a game plan to hang them and then plan to process them later.
Yeah. And I guess with being a little bit warm still.
It is a little bit warm to hang them, yeah.
So anybody that's listening, if you're hanging birds this fall, let us know what you think.
Yeah.
So we're going to be trying that as well.
If you're aging them.
Yeah.
It's funny you talk about that birds on the field and stuff like that, and I think that's like one of the major things that gets the birds flying and out of, like, because you know they all hang around like the waterways and the parks and golf courses and stuff like that, but it's almost like the kickoff to fall and then announcement that fall's in is when those crops start coming off and the geese are starting to hit the fields, and it's just like the birds are starting to go, and it's a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah,
just thinking about that, sitting in the tree stand the other night.
Right on.
Geese were flying.
So we got a pretty cool podcast episode.
It's pretty awesome.
Can I spill the beans now?
Yeah.
Okay. So we got kind of like a legend in the Brandon area, WHL, kind of stars, Jordan Tutu. And he was drafted to Nashville in 2003. No, sorry, 2001. And he had a great career in the NHL. He was, I think, very well known. And now that he's retired, he's doing a lot of work with Aboriginal communities, mental health, etc. And so we had an opportunity to get in contact with him and talk to him about basically the connection between, say, mental health and the outdoors and how it helped his career.
Yeah. Awesome. So enjoy this one, guys. Listen in and crank enjoy it up.
Right on. So today we are sitting down in beautiful Neepawa, Manitoba, actually in a hotel room because we're doing some work with the Neepawa Tourism. And we had a chance to get on the phone with Jordan Tutu. He's a Manitoba fan favorite with Brandon Wheat Kings. He played 4 years there and over 10 years in NHL with a couple other teams, but mostly with the Nashville Predators. So we'd like to welcome to the podcast, Jordan. Are you there?
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. That's thanks a lot for coming on. It's actually, I'm sitting here smiling like a little schoolgirl. I get to talk to this guy that I used to watch in the Wheat City. Yeah, but
right on.
Well, let's start this podcast with some five quick questions.
All right, Jordan. So I got a few questions for you here, and they're kind of loosely based on hopefully some of your interests. But first one, what is your favorite wild food?
My favorite wild food is raw caribou.
No way.
That's interesting.
Well, like, what would be like the piece of raw meat from the caribou that you'd like?
I love it all, guys. Everything.
That's awesome.
The tenderloin obviously is always the good stuff with a little bit of fat on it.
Nice.
That's good. I like that. Okay, question number two. We're going over to music for a second. If you had one live concert to see for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I would probably go with Metallica.
Nice. Interesting. I like that.
One of my favorite bands. So.
Right on. Okay.
Metallica.
Right on. Question three, fishing or hunting?
Hunting.
Nice. Okay. And so last one might be a little bit more of a involved answer, but after retirement, is there anything that you plan on doing more in the outdoors kind of thing? Because I know you guys are pretty busy with hockey. You don't have a lot of free time. So now that you're retired, are you planning on any particular activities outside?
Yeah, I've always talked about the outdoors being a huge part of my life, and obviously hunting seasons seem to be up and going while I was playing hockey, so now that I'm retired I'll have more time to get out in the bush and just be in nature.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's kind of the same thing I think a lot of like kids get when they get into the maybe not like higher ranks, but like into the junior levels and stuff. And hockey starts in like the end of August and it goes right through the prime time. So then when those guys start to finish their careers in quotations, then they start heading back into the outdoors. And we see that a lot, I know, in my friend group and a lot of other groups. But growing up, before maybe starting your hockey career and being up in the far north, could you maybe go through how that worked, like as growing up as a kid and where you lived and like what you guys would do like outside and go hunting, mm-hmm. and stuff like
yeah.
that?
Yeah, so I grew up in Rankin Inlet, Nunavut, which is located along the Hudson Bay. Very, very isolated community. So it's a fly-in, fly-out only. Only about, when I was there, 1,700 people. And, living in the far north, we had an abundance of nature to be on, and so growing up as a kid, the outdoor lifestyle was a huge part. It was almost survival mode for us. We hunted for our food, we fish, and we basically grew up out on the land. I think as a young kid you don't realize how good you have it, and you kind of take advantage of that kind of lifestyle. And you know, for me, I think when I left home, that's when I really started to miss the outdoors.
So what age were you? You said when you left home, so around what age was that? And then that's assuming that you're leaving home to start on your professional career for hockey?
Yeah, so I left when I was 14. So, you know, and at that age, I feel that for a lot of young teenage kids who love hunting and fishing, you know, for me, it was a lifestyle, right? And it was a transition stage in my life where when I was down in the South, I couldn't just pick up and go. You know, everything had to be planned. And, you know, that aspect of, you know, the Southern life where, you know, everything's got to be planned out. Where I grew up, you know, we can just pack the sled, pack the quad, and off we go into the wild. And, you know, we're hunting for caribou, muskox, you know, wolves, wolverines, whatever. And I think, you know, there was a time where I almost gave up because I wanted to do that. I love hunting more than I love the game of hockey. But I stuck it out and made a career out of it.
Yeah, you did all right, too. I know Sheldon and I can both relate to what you're saying there quite well. We spend, we used to spend quite a bit of time up north. We spent quite a bit of time in Churchill. So, you know, making that comparison from the southern lifestyle to the northern lifestyle is certainly something that's very, very clear, especially to us.
Yeah.
And like you said, and it's just completely different.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like, I was kind of like the opposite. I'd be up in Churchill working for 3 or 4 months at a time, and then I'd come down south, or I'd be just like craving to just drive around in like the fields, you know what I mean? Like, and get into the flat open spaces. So it would maybe a little bit opposite, but kind of the same feeling, I'm sure.
Yeah, totally. And you know, when I go and visit remote communities, I always reiterate that for Indigenous people, the land is a place where we heal, where we connect, where we let go. And, you know, it's taught to us by our ancestors. You know, my father was born out on the land, grew up hunting and fishing for food, and, you know, something that was always instilled in us as, you know, Inuit kids. You learn to respect the land. You learn to you know, just live in the moment. And that's where, for me, you know, after living in the South for the last 20 years, every opportunity I had to get out on the land and just be free, you know, you kind of forget about what's going on in life and just be present.
Yeah. For sure. And like, that's the other thing I'd like to just to maybe pick your brain on is like, having a career in hockey, there's got to be a lot of organization, a lot of hustle and bustle, traveling, etc. But was there times in your career where you would kind of relate to your growing up in the wild and in the middle of nowhere that kind of made it easy for you to have transitions, like from city to city, etc.?
Absolutely. You know, like, I've been to, you know, major cities throughout North America, and you know, the hustle and bustle, you know, it just sometimes would get too much for me. And you know, I'd be sitting in my hotel room just reminiscing about how simple life is when you're out in the bush or out on the land. You know, it gives you a calm sense of feeling, and you know, you just kind of take a deep breath and just really appreciate everything that you have in life, because, you know, you look back at our ancestors and, you know, the hard times that they've gone through and what they've had to deal with, you know, living off the land, you really learn to appreciate everything you have.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I could definitely relate to that too. Spending time in the bush and just everything is pretty much out of your control at that point, and you know you got to just kind of accept that. And only thing that is in your control essentially is if which way to go, essentially, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Yes,
it's one of those. And go ahead.
Yeah, that's that's a great point because I feel in this day and age, a lot of our young youth are being distracted by, social media influences and, the materialistic things. I remember as a kid, my father would never let us, grab a box of bullets and practice because, to him, every bullet mattered. It was almost like a life or death situation where, what if you have one bullet left? You have to make sure you savor that for the right moment. And, it's just about having patience and just being able to reflect on, what matters most. And in that moment, that's all you're thinking about.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I kind of want to touch back on how you're kind of transitioning to these bigger cities and stuff, and like you said, social media and stuff like that. And it just, in my mind, if you look at the evolution of humans, these last 100 years have been evolved so quickly that, I often think, are we keeping up with everything that's going on, and is everyone keeping up with all this? Because if you look at the past, we have a far, far greater representation and history with living off of the natural world as opposed to being in this technological jungle, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you're bang on there. A lot of people don't know how to, just kind of live in the moment, right? They're always... Everyone's always looking for the next big best thing, where essentially in life, I always refer back to, I wish we all just live like animals because it's simple, right? It's either you're in survival mode every day, and there's not, other than that, you don't have a worry in the world. You live within your territory. You basically mind your own business, and that's how animals are. They know the patterns, and it's just simple life.
Yeah, there's a thing that I always think about. We all do a bunch of archery hunting here with Panoramic Outdoors, and there's one thing that always goes in my mind when I'm going into a tree stand. It's like I forget basically everything that I was worrying about that week, and I'm like, kind of like a self-help meditation, kind of like be one with nature and make sure you're not even detected by anything out there. And it almost like it's a relief for me to be out in that tree stand. And a lot of people don't realize what we talk about when it comes to the outdoors, and they might do other things to escape reality in a way, as in meditation or yoga, etc. For me, it's getting outside and being there, and it's self-help, and it's helped me a lot, I think, in a lot of different ways. So everything that you said and Chase said makes a lot of sense to me.
Yes. No, that's, I think, it's a place where, like I said earlier, as Indigenous people, this is where we're true to ourselves. This is where the simple things matter. You kind of, like you said, you switch your thought process and just, being in nature is, people who have never done it before will never understand until they actually get out in the bush and feel that, right? We can talk about it all we want, but at the end of the day, it's about experiencing it and educating people that, the land has given us opportunities that will last forever. Will last a generation, generations. And I honestly, as a Inuk kid, there's no better feeling than just being alone in the wild.
Yeah, that's a good point. And some people might view that in a weird way, because like I can say the exact same thing, and I consider myself quite a bit of an extrovert, we'll say. So I enjoy lots of time being in crowds, being with people and socializing, but there's always a bigger part of me that if I were to say either give up that loneliness in the wild or give up the extrovert, I would for sure give up that extrovert part just to be able to be outdoors somewhere in the peaceful environment, essentially.
Yeah, so I had a few people from New York City, you know, living, they grew up in New York, and they actually came up to my hometown, and we went out on the land for 3 days, and they didn't want to leave. They've never experienced the solitude, the just being alone and the noise, right? They said it was an experience of a lifetime. And that's what it's all about, right? Like to really educate the people that, you know, may not be outdoorsy. You know, I think this is a path where, you know, it really can open eyes and show people what us Indigenous people are talking about.
Yeah, definitely. That's incredible that you did that. And yeah, I often find when you take somebody from bigger urban centers and take them into the complete wilderness, we'll say, because I mean, lots of people do hunt and stuff closer into cities, and it's still a little bit noisy. But when you get into that remote area, which I'm sure you get outside of Rankin Inlet, and it's the noise of nothing is almost deafening, you could say.
Yeah.
And
totally. Yeah, I agree.
Do you find that kind of transition from bringing people from the city into these isolated areas, is that a easy transition for people to get used to that kind of solitude, do you find?
Well, you know, I think from watching, you know, a lot of people who've never experienced that, you know, once you get them out there, it's almost like they don't know what to do with themselves, right? You know, they're always looking for the next thing. Okay, what do we got to do next? You know, what can I do? And you know, you just kind of remind them, hey, you know, there's no timetable out here. You go with the flow. You just enjoy the scenery, and just basically soak it all in. And you know, when we get back to town, you know, that's time to debrief and really let it sink in, because a lot of people aren't trained to just slow their life down, right? Because they're just used to the fast-paced life and go, and out when you're out in the bush, it's you know, life really slows down. And ultimately, wildlife owns that land, and you're in their territory. So you start to have different thought process on, you know, how life works out there.
Yeah, I like how you put that, because I kind of relate it to like our moose camps or deer camps, and you bring a new guy in or bring someone that maybe is not in their very comfort zone, and they're always like, hey, what can I do next? And it's like, man, it doesn't matter. Pick up the axe and cut some wood or do this. Just help us out at camp to like, and it's not a survival maybe as much it is up way up north, but it's just like, we're out here, there's no time. If you want to go fishing, go fishing. If you want to go and look for a moose, go look for a moose. And that mentality of slowing down, there's no timetable, we're here for whatever length of time, let's worry about the length of time at the end of it, not, you know, in the middle. And yeah, I really like how you said that. And while we're talking about kind of that, can you maybe run us through like a traditional hunting practice while you're, you know, way up north? Like we have ours, like going to deer camp or going to moose camp or duck camp or whatever. Do you guys have like some sort of similar traditions, let's say, up there?
Yeah. So, you know, the Inuit, you know, it's kind of hard to explain, but you know, when we say we're going caribou hunting, you know, we're not specifically going just for caribou. You know, whatever, it's almost like whatever you see roaming out there, you're hunting it, right? You know, there could be geese flying. Oh, pull out the shotgun, let's get a couple geese. Or, you know, there's a wolverine. Let's go hunt that down. Because everything we hunt for is for a purpose, you know, whether it's for food, whether it's for clothing. We don't, hunting for us isn't a sport. It's survival.
Right.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy to see the differences in the communities and cultures where that you see that really aren't influenced that much by like mainstream media and that stuff. Cause like you said, you've been to the biggest of the cities in North America, and I'm sure you've traveled across the world in some of those cities, and then you go home to where none of that stuff matters, and it's just, you know, people are wearing fur because that's what they have available to them, you know, and that's what keeps them warm, and that's what wolverine fur has got to be one of the best furs you can wear.
Yeah,
right? Totally. And you know what, like, to us, it ain't a joke when you're out there, right? You know, like you see a lot of sport hunters, sport fishermen. You know, they're out there because they think it's fun, right? You know, for my mentality growing up was always, you know, it's business out here, right? Because if you play around, you know, you're 300 miles from town, you know, there's no room for error. So you're always constantly on the lookout, your brain, you're always grazing. And that's where my father, you know, every time we were all hunting with him, you have that sense of peace, right? Because you, like, I always knew my dad was, you know, was safe, and you know, this was his territory, right? And it's hard to explain, but when you're out there, I mean, there ain't nothing better.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's very hard to explain some of the feelings that people get in the outdoors or wherever you're at, one with nature, whatever you want to call it. And that's the reason why we like to have these sort of talks and podcasts and for education. And, you know, I think we have a persona as some people have a persona as outdoor people of being this like rough and tough, burly guy. But, you know, setting that aside, it's about, yeah, self-help, being safe in a safe space or safe zone, and just doing a little bit of self-reflection. And we really like that part of it.
Yes.
And like just wheeling into the next kind of like little topic, you do, now that you are retired from the NHL, you're doing a lot of mental health awareness, suicide prevention awareness, and et cetera. Like, what's some of the stuff that you're doing nowadays?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, I ended my career in a natural retirement and building my brand and really working on my personal life, right? You know, it takes a lot of years to be comfortable and content in your own skin after you've lived through a lot of ups and downs, adversities, tragedies. You know, for me at this point in my life, I feel that it's the right thing to do by sharing my story in the Indigenous communities and hopefully raising awareness on mental health and suicide prevention, because, you know, every individual deserves to be on this land for a reason. It's just about finding your purpose. And you know, when I get out to these communities, it really just opens up the conversation. And I think, you know, it's been a great reception getting out to these reserves and First Nations communities and sharing my story.
Yeah, that's awesome. I guess that's basically kind of what our biggest plan was to kind of pick your brain about mental health and all that stuff, and then the outdoors, and then maybe like how it relates. And I think we've done a pretty good job on kind of connecting the dots there between the two things. And the good thing about, I think, this conversation is I think a lot of people, fans of yours and maybe people that might not know you as well, that might not know that you started out in the outdoors. Like, you started out in the survival, and then and the hockey thing was kind of like second to everything else. I think that's a fair statement, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was, like I said, I am very grateful for everything that I've experienced and being able to stay grounded because of the land. Right. You know, I think when you look at life as a whole, you always want to, pinpoint a certain interests of yours and connection and find your purpose. And for me, I've always reverted back to the land and how it's really brought me peace and love and harmony, and really changes your perspective on life, right? When you're out there. Something that I can share with my listeners and people that have never experienced that.
Yeah, that's great. If there's something that you could tell anybody else that might be interested or see the outdoors as an avenue for some sort of, like, we'll say mental stabilization or like some sort of getaway that hasn't really had any experience in the outdoors, what would you tell them?
Well, you know, first and foremost, a lot of people are fearful of the unknown. You know, when you get out of your comfort zone and experience something different, it may be life altering for you. And for a lot of people who've never been out on the land, you know, try it out. You know, it's something that no one could ever take back from you. And it's something that really will open your eyes to, you know, certain aspects of your life. Like I said, we can talk all we want about our experiences and what it's done to us. But ultimately it's taking the onus and really stepping outside the box and experiencing the outdoors.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, with when we started this group there a year and a bit ago, our kind of goal was to help people get outside, and for whatever reason, if it's mental health or whatever, just to like get outside. And it doesn't have to be that you have to pick up something to go and hunt, or you have to go and buy fishing rods to go fishing. Like, take your camera, take your phone, just go sit outside and like just enjoy it. You know, there's a lot of things in this world that we don't enjoy that we should. And yes. It really brings a lot of peace. And just like you said, like all that stuff you said, love, harmony, etc. It brings that stuff. And people don't realize how easy it is just to go and sit in a, you know, in a bush and just check out stuff.
Just disconnect.
Yeah. It's crazy. And that's, yeah, it's exactly why we wanted to have you on. We wanted to touch base on that. It's maybe a little bit different from your regular podcast. I heard your one with Spit and Chicklets there and had a couple good laughs. So. This might not be your...
No, but, you know, I this is a great way to, for listeners, you know, to really think about, you know, their life. You know, you go out in the bush and, you know, I could stare at a tree and pick away at it and, you know, really ask those questions to yourself, you know, like, how long has this tree been here? What possessed this tree to become right here? So it really gets your brain thinking outside the box, right? And you just kind of living in that moment, right? Like I said before, there's to me, there's no better feeling than the solitude, the just being away from society and really focusing on what's in front of you.
Yeah, yeah. Like that. So I got one last question here before we kind of wrap things up, and it's a little bit not based on mental health, but kind of going back to your home in Rankin. What rifle do you guys normally use for hunting up there?
Yeah, so up there, you know, like I said before, hunting isn't a sport. So no one, you know, when I was growing up, ever used a bow and arrow. We use rifles, shotguns. You know, my father has had the same rifle for 35 years, 22-250. you know, we use 270s, 30-30s, 303s. You know, because when we hunt, it's for food. You know, we hunt to kill, and that's, you know, with the bow and arrow, to me, like when I'm down south here, you know, as much as I love being out, it's just a totally different mentality, right, compared to how I grew up.
Absolutely.
So even if I'm not hunting, you know, I love to just tag along with friends of mine that are big hunters and just being out there, right, helping out, lending a helping hand.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so you guys essentially in Rankin are using the best tools to get the job done when it comes to harvesting game.
Yes, exactly. Because, you know, up there, you never know when your next meal is going to be, right? When you're out there. So it's, you see something and you have it in your sight, you only have one goal, and that's to get it down.
Yeah.
Right on. And I got one last question for you, and because I'm kind of a hockey nerd on the side here, it's going to have to be hockey related, but what was I got a two-part question. Who was like the best player that you had like the most respect for, and that was a great hockey player all around? And the second part of that question was, where was your highlight of your long NHL career?
All right. So for the first question there, I had the opportunity to play, you know, with many, many great players. Two guys come to mind when I had my time in Nashville. Mr. Paul Kariya was a guy that I, you know, looked up to as a kid, and, you know, here I am sitting right next to him in the dressing room and just, you know, watching him as a professional, and the way he carried himself, you know, was pretty awesome to be around. And another guy, when I was in Detroit, I don't know if you guys remember the name, Pavel Datsyuk.
Pav
was a huge outdoorsman, so we connected really well that way. We spent a lot of time fishing together. Any day off we had, we were out on the streams, on the rivers, the lakes, whatever. So I got to get to know him pretty well and talk a lot about, you know, and forget about the game when we're out there and just talk, you know, hunting stories, fishing stories. You know, that was a guy that I respected a lot and, you know, connected well with. And the last part of your question, my highlight throughout my entire hockey career would probably be in 2003 when I represented Team Canada in Halifax. Yeah. You know, being able to represent your country was a huge honor and memory that I'll have for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that was I remember that too. Marc-Andre Fleury was your goalie that year, right?
Yes,
and
he was.
Guys, yeah, had a pretty good tournament. It was awesome to watch.
Didn't win the gold medal, but you know, playing in Canada and representing your nation.
True. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, with any hockey fan and from Canada, like, cannot wait for World Junior time. And even if you get gold or not, it's always fun to watch. So, yeah, that's awesome. And the whole Pavel Datsyuk thing, that just like kind of blows my mind, because I never thought that maybe that he was outdoors guy. I just didn't know that. So that's pretty interesting.
Oh, we'd go on the road. We go on a road trip, and soon as we land, the first thing he would say to me is, "There's a Cabela's 30 minutes from our hotel. What time do you want to meet in the lobby?"
That's
awesome. We'd go to Cabela's and we'd spend hours in there. He'd look at every lure, every line, you know, and it's just, you know, fascinating to see a world class NHL Hall of Famer, you know, finding what he truly loves away from the game of hockey, and you know, just to be around that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I don't want to keep you going here, but is there a lot of hockey players out there that do have that connection with the outdoors? Like, there's got to be lots, like
tons of guys.
Yeah,
tons of guys. I feel that, you know, for a lot of hockey guys that I've been around, this is their time where they just kind of are able to forget about everything that's going on. You know, there's no pressure out there, and just reflect and just be present in the moment. A lot of hockey guys spend tons of time outdoors, out in the wild.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, right on, Jordan. Thanks a lot for taking some time to talk with us today. I think it was a great conversation, and, you know, happy retirement. I hope everything that's going for you is going good, and you know, maybe hopefully someday down the road we can do this again and maybe elaborate a little bit more on what you're doing with the mental health. And yeah, from us at Panoramic, we just thank you again, and we really appreciate what you're doing for the young people in our communities and Manitoba, Canada, and all around where you're doing things. So.
Right on, guys. Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks again, Jordan.
Okay, guys. Take care.
You too.
Well, that was freaking amazing, man.
Pretty awesome. You know, I really didn't know what to expect when you told me we were having him on, and I mean, obviously I knew he was from Northern Canada, so he had to have some major background in the outdoors and stuff like that, but really eye-opening for me for like the connection and some of the same, like lots of the same kind of connections that we have with the outdoors.
Yeah,
which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Just the relationship that same thing as what you said, and just the relationship I found with lots of his stories and the way he kind of lives his life, and how it always goes back to his grassroots on how he's like surviving, you know.
Yeah.
And how it all started, and it, you know, like I've read his book and big hockey fan, etc., and he's been through a lot of stuff that you know, maybe some of us haven't been through, and some of us that have been through. But at the end of the day, it's just like his message is just like, we're all the same. We all got to like find those safe spots in our lives and not be afraid to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's huge for the outdoors. Like, a big thing that I love about what we're doing is, like, you know, we're opening up doors or opening up eyes and giving maybe some entertainment or education about being outside. And like, it doesn't have to be, you know, shooting a trophy deer, but it's just like those connections. And I think it's very important.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I kind of found interesting too, is like, he spoke a lot about harvesting and like, harvesting as a lifestyle kind of thing. How when they went out to get food, when they went out hunting, it was to bring something home, you know?
Yeah.
So they did a lot of like rifle hunting and stuff like that, but which I totally appreciate, especially in the far north. And I was just kind of thinking on my own too, as like I kind of did that growing up, as always seemed like the first thing I seen was taken for like a whitetail or whatever, and we always appreciated that meat in the freezer for sure. And now that I have a little bit more time to get out and do some hunting, I kind of still have that mentality, but at the same time, I want to wait for something a little bigger, we'll say.
Yeah.
Not only because just to take a bit of a larger animal to put a little bit more meat in the freezer, but it also gives me more time to sit out there just be outside, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is just another thing that just really enjoy getting out.
Yeah.
As lots of people say.
Yeah. And I like with that little podcast interview or whatever you want to call it, just the fact that he said, like, You know, like for us, we have like deer camps, elk camps, etc. that we like get geared up for, and we go out and do it. But for them, you know, up north, it was like, yeah, we would go hunting, but it was like, okay, well, if a caribou is coming across, we're getting it because we have,
yeah.
And like the thing, like the relationship between that and like that one bullet thing he was talking about, his father was taught him. You know, like we don't practice, we have that one bullet. It could be your last bullet.
Yeah.
And like in a sense, like I found like that connection with like that could be the last caribou you might see for 3 days.
Yeah.
And like if we don't get it, like they don't have meat for 3 days or whatever it is, yeah. Right? So there's like that connection there that it was just it just kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, yeah. They really seem to execute and I guess seize the opportunity at hand.
Yeah.
Essentially. And they don't have the resources that we do down south here, obviously, with buying ammunition, buying all kinds of guns. And like you can, with guns and bows and hunting stuff, you can geek out on it like crazy down here. And that's, it's more, I guess you can say more sporty or more of a, oh, I don't know what I would call it. But you can kind of follow a trend in things that are happening in the world down there. Whereas up there, it's just more of a sustenance harvesting. They have tools that work. That's what they use. That's like you said, his dad's been shooting that same rifle for 30 years or 35 years or whatever it is. Yeah. So
old trusty.
It's cool.
It is. Yeah. So yeah, that was a great episode. I really enjoyed it. It kind of brought a little bit more light to my ideas behind the outdoors, and it was an eye opener for other people too.
I like the fact that he was getting out while he was on the road and
like yeah
in
like Detroit when he's like stuff. Oh Pavel Datsyuk, I'm like what, like really? Yeah. The magician knows how to like go and you know throw a hook in the water. Like it blows my mind. And like you said, there's a lot of hockey players out there that enjoy the outdoors and do it. And
yeah,
those are things you don't really hear about. You hear about them scoring goals or
yeah,
you know what I mean. Like the media doesn't follow the you know maybe like the relaxing part of their lives. It's always yeah. about the hustle and bustle. And
yeah,
so that's pretty neat. I like yeah. that.
Cool.
Final well, thought. What's your final thought?
Final. I don't know. I'm looking forward to the rest of the day today. Beautiful day outside. We got our gear in. So if you're listening to this and you haven't got your gear yet, it's coming to you.
Yeah. I can't wait to open the box. It's gonna be like Christmas over here.
Yeah.
Do that shortly. One more thing. I listened to Harvester Outdoors podcast.
They got a podcast now.
It was a good listen. So if you guys are looking for another Manitoba podcast,
check that one out. Yeah, if you guys don't know who they are, Shawnee's out of Selkirk. So he's got an outdoor store. They're bringing more and more stuff in there. You can also pick up one of our hats there if you're looking for one.
Yep.
And yeah, he's got some good gear in there. So check him out.
Right on.
Thanks for listening, guys.
See you later.